Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It was right on the wall that Jeenbekov-Atambayev alliance in Kyrgyzstan cannot last for long. As we speak, things are really fluid and a lot could change between now and the day when this podcast will be published. But speaking of today, Thursday, President Jeenbekov appears to be moving ahead with full speed to claim the government. In doing so, it appears that he is cleaning the house from Atambayev's loyalists, the latest of whom was the prosecutor general. Even the future of Prime Minister Isakov's government is in question. So where things are headed in Bishkek? Where does this leave the alliance? And what is Jeenbekov's endgame? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Erika Marat, Associate Professor at the National Defense University in Washington, D.C., who closely follow developments in her home country, Kyrgyzstan. Edil Baysalov, political activist in Bishkek, is joining us. He is in the middle of this storm. Chris Rickleton, AFP's Central Asia correspondent, is joining us from Almaty today, who was until recently in Bishkek before being expelled. We also have Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi, who keeps close eyes on these developments from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Very nice to have you. Now, the latest news is the firing of Prosecutor General. She is among a long list of Atambayev loyalists who lost their jobs in the last couple of days. So, Edil, what is happening there? Is it the house cleaning going on there?
It is. We are, of course, having lots of conversations with many participants and observers, and the feeling is quite exciting times in Kyrgyzstan, because I was more of an optimist, but the general majority of my friends have been warning that Atambayev is here forever and he's going to freeze things, you know, for the next few years. But of course, you know, it wasn't me, but I've read was online in social media and newspapers. People are talking about the third revolution, that this change in government and what we are witnessing, the change of times, the change of the era, that the change of guard, it was completely caught, you know, what you call Atambayev loyalists and the general public by surprise. We're seeing in the last few weeks how the carpet is being pulled from under them.
Mm. Erika, what do you see happening in Kyrgyzstan these days?
Well, somewhat similar what Baysalov said. It is a competition between two individuals, and everyone expected that Atambayev will retain his influence in the political system. But Jeenbekov seems to move forward with his own power and is trying to centralize it by getting rid of Atambayev's loyalists. Right. We'll see how far it goes. I also think that is, as much as it is optimistic that we finally see transfer of power and marginalization of former president, I think it is also somewhat dangerous because Jeenbekov might not stop there and continue centralizing power, using the parliament to adopt other policies that favor his presidency and not necessarily broader political spectrum.
Hmm. Using parliament, Erika, you said that's very interesting. And I also want to bring this to another issue that we would like to talk about today. Maybe, Chris, you want to jump in here. The way Prosecutor General was fired. Kyrgyz parliament has like 120 seats. The motion of firing her got like 105 votes. And majority of them obviously come from the ruling party, and ruling party is headed by Atambayev. So tell us, please, the significance of this firing and the way she was fired.
Just a note to say that my views are my own and don't represent my employer. Sure. The usual disclaimer. So, yes, full support in parliament, almost full support for the firing of Indira Joldebayeva. And what's interesting, and Edil or Erika might correct me on this if I'm wrong, I think the very limited opposition that did came from the Social Democratic Party itself. So, you know, a minority of MPs in SDPK opposed the motion. So Jeenbekov is in this an interesting situation in which he has enormous political capital, really. The full support of the parliament, which Almazbek Atambayev gained over his six-year term, but didn't have at the very beginning of his six-year term. So just as Erika said, the risk is that this can go on to be a situation in which Jeenbekov consolidates power in the wrong way or in the wrong direction. But the positive is that he has enormous political capital to pursue reforms if he wants to do that.
Bruce, we were also talking about this a little bit earlier in our private conversations. You know, the way the firing of the prosecutor general took place, first to take your point on that, how significant is this? And also, who's in charge of the ruling party these days?
Well, the second question is probably the more interesting at the moment. You know, I really couldn't say. I mean, officially, of course, it's almost Bekaut Tembaya, but I suppose that brings us to the first question, because I thought it was fascinating that they had the Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan holds this Congress, and they elect Atambayev to be the head of the party, and and then he comes out and criticizes Jeenbekov a little bit, and that seemed to like really pull the trigger on the changes that all of a sudden started. I mean, it came right after that. That was the Congress was on March 31st, if I remember right. Yeah. The justice minister was dismissed just like 2 days after that. You know, then we had the head of security, the State National Security Committee, and his deputy went on April 7th. You know, and then now we have the prosecutor general, and those are the big names. Yeah. But there's a lot of other people that are mm-hmm. really important that are also being dismissed here too. You know, the head of the October court in Bishkek, who was really responsible for the verdicts against some of these media outlets, was also sacked. Mm. You know, the deputy tax chief went. The head of the presidential security team was also, who was an Atambayev guy, was also dismissed. You know, so it seemed like. It was amazing to see how fast Jeenbekov's people moved after the Congress for the Social Democratic Party and that criticism from Atambayev. I mean, they were ready for this, obviously. And we don't have any idea where exactly this is going to end. You know, I mean, I see talk in Kyrgyz media all the time about Prime Minister Isakov not lasting very much longer too, and a lot of people speculate that there's a split. If there isn't already a split in the Social Democratic Party, there will be very soon, and that will prompt the collapse of the current government and require a new prime minister to be named.
While Jeenbekov is doing all this, he appears to be having full support by SDPK, which is headed by Atambayev. Does it mean that party is revolting against him?
Yeah, I would just say that you would have to say that there's some basis to believe that is true. And remember, even when they held the Congress, there were members of SDPK who were specifically not invited and not allowed to attend. So we already see the signs of this.
Now, Idil, as people are talking about the fate of Interior Minister. Is he in danger too?
He's a very, very small fish. He's, of course, a personal bodyguard of Almazbek Atambayev, who was elevated as appointed Minister of the Interior. And, of course, he doesn't have a good standing in the police itself, and he's not an independent figure. And, of course, his fate is already very much decided. But even within the next few weeks that he is standing while government of Sapar Isakov is counting its last weeks, if not days, you know, he's not a real factor.
What makes you say that?
You know, if President Jeenbekov decides to move to dismiss the government, he can do it in seconds. Because, you know, when we were considering who is going to fall first, it was always the government of Sapar Isakov, because it was the easiest. A small fraction in the ruling majority can just walk out, therefore collapsing the parliamentary majority, and Sapar Isakov's government immediately becomes acting, and no one, not a single member of parliament, not a single party wants to see him back. You know, they don't want to fight him. I you know, it's my feeling, of course, but I've spoken to several members of parliament who share it, the same sentiment. You know, they don't want to be criticizing this government because it is seen as almost below their dignity. They just want to collapse the parliamentary majority and then just start talking about the new majority and there will be a new prime minister coming in. No talk of Sapar Isakov surviving the next few weeks, if not days.
Erika, your take on this?
Well, yes. I mean, to begin with, change of prime ministers in Kyrgyzstan is nothing new. So it's about time, if you follow the pattern, it's about time for Isakov to go.
Do you see signs it's coming?
You know, you can interpret them both ways. Yeah. I mean, it is going to happen sooner or later, probably within this year. I don't want to predict anything, you know, exact timeline. But what I do want to say is that what we see in Kyrgyzstan is all political centers, they have to balance between not centralizing too much power in their hands, so Jeenbekov, Atambayev, or anyone in the parliament, because the result would perhaps be another change of regimes, as we've seen in the last decade. At the same time, they need to be able to function in a multipolar political environment. So it is a tough job.
Yes.
And I think overall, it's good for political discourse. Not much governance is done, but hopefully over time, it will result in stronger alliances, more ideologically driven alliances. That's my optimistic view.
Erika, if I may follow this up, you know, I would like to inform you, my friends, that believe it or not, our president and the whole political class is very much inspired by the presidency of no one else but Shavkat Mirziyoyev, the person who we all thought was just a successor. We didn't know him, but who quickly moved to consolidate, to launch very brave reforms, to break from the past very weak, figure of his predecessor, and then attack very much the same institutions that Mr. Jeenbekov is dealing with, the state national security apparatus, the general prosecutor. As you know, the man was jailed by Shavkat Mirziyoyev. And number two, of course, we have events of 2005 and 2010. And what Erika has been saying, this this anxiety, how consolidated or how authoritarian will eventually the Jeenbekov regime presidency become, or how Mr. Atambayev is framing the Jeenbekov family. You know, he's not choosing words. He is directly mudsliding them as the new Bakiyevs. But I can tell you one thing, and I will be making very bold predictions on this very podcast, that we are expecting within the next week or weeks, we will see high-level arrest, most certainly of the former general prosecutor Indira Joldubayeva, of the chairman of the Kyrgyz State National Security, Mr. Abdil Segizbayev, of the power, of the money bag of the former president and, you know, his very high confidant, former driver, Ikram Ilmiyanov. We will see many, many arrests. And I will tell you this, we are probably going to see impeachment of our former president, and he will be stripped of his status of the ex-president, because, as you know, the ex-presidency enjoys immunity from criminal persecution, and he has been selling it himself for the last 6 years, and he repeated it last week that he is not afraid of persecution, but we need to remove the barrier of the legal immunity that he is enjoying. And I will be telling you that we are probably going to see him in jail very much, because the swinging of the public opinion, the how much it has shifted in the opposite direction, and how much people are discovering the high scale of corruption and the hypocrisy of the Atambayev regime that came with the bloodshed of our youth, who paid for his government, and all people will be demanding him.
Let me counter you a little bit. You know, the claims that you are having on Atambayev, obviously, I would like to hear a little bit more from the panelists on that. But Jeenbekov was part of that government in many different positions, as a governor, as a prime minister. So what is that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know,
he's not
when
clean
we
either.
When we were discussing a little bit earlier the Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan, as if it was a real party, as if that could be split, or there will be fractions. Come on, you know, this is a joke. The party was a list that was made up by President Atambayev and his chauffeur, just who paid more money, who represents this faction, this, that. You know, this all hypocritical man who will be eat him first. And we've told this over the years. We warned that he will, at the end, remain with his chauffeur, with his bodyguard, with his what is called office assistants, secretaries, who he has made appointed them, members of parliament or ministers of in the cabinet. He doesn't have any other loyal groups of fractions. He alienated everybody.
Okay, who wants to jump in here? Just the same points that raised by Edel, Chris, Bruce, Erika, please jump in.
I'll jump in if that's okay. Firstly, I'd fully agree with Adil on Shavkat Mirziyoyev. I think he's changed the dynamic in Central Asia because for so long our associations with Uzbekistan weren't just of an authoritarian country, but of a country in stagnation. It was also interesting that Jeenbekov, this speech at the Security Council, which was so contentious, which angered Atambayev so much, all he was really saying was that the government needed to take on corruption, to renew the fight against corruption. And of course, it should be any president's right and, in fact, obligation to do that. But that speech came shortly after a survey by the International Republican Institute that revealed that 95% of Kyrgyzstani citizens thought that corruption was still a major problem. So Jeenbekov is under pressure, not strong pressure, but pressure from several fronts to look proactive. And Atambayev's reaction to this speech, I think, was highly unreasonable. On to what will happen next. I'm not one for bold predictions either. Erika and Adil probably know that I get them wrong when I do make them. But I don't think Jeenbekov will have an interest in arresting Atambayev or taking this political battle further than it needs to go. In many ways, he's already won it. I think we'll gain a lot of respect from the political establishment and people at large if he appoints people to the Prosecutor General's position and to the National Security Service position that are specialists in their field rather than political and politicized appointments. But I don't think, because let's not forget that Atambayev fell out with Rosa Otunbayeva, a former president as well. I think purely on the basis of the potential for political instability, I can't see Jeenbekov going to that length and moving to arrest a former president.
Fair. And obviously, we are playing a little bit of guess game here when we are trying to predict what might happen in Kyrgyzstan. And that's often really difficult question to answer. Now, but what is happening is, like, when all this is happening, how Atambayev is responding to this, Erika?
Well, I'm sure he's very upset about it. I get a sense that he saw himself as a historic figure for Kyrgyzstan for all the wrong reasons. And he's very erratic, unpredictable. So we'll probably hear more of his grievances voiced publicly.
I heard that he was in China. Bruce, what was that about?
You know, I was kind of vague on that myself. I know that he attended some conference that they were having out there, and they had a picture of him with the Chinese president. Why he was there, I have no idea. Why was he invited?
Any connection to what's happening these days?
I'm sure from his point of view, it doesn't hurt to be seen with the Chinese president, and have a picture out there and say, kind of, I've got friends in big places. How interested the Chinese would be in getting involved in Kyrgyz politics, I think we can all pretty much make a guess that not very. As long as their interests are protected in Kyrgyzstan, I don't think it really matters to them who's in charge. If I could just comment real quick on the point about what happens to Atambayev. I'm not going to say whether he deserves it or not, and I know that generally in Kyrgyzstan they want people that have done wrong to be held responsible for it, and they want justice. We've seen it with the Bakiya family, we've seen it with the Akaya family. Putting Atambayev in jail, in prison, would, in my opinion, be a bad thing. Even if he deserves it, because you have to set a precedent that you can leave office in Kyrgyzstan and not end up, in jail or having to flee the country sooner or later. Otherwise, no one's going to want to leave office. This is a problem.
but Bruce, as Mohammed has rightfully pointed out, Mr. Sooronbay Jeenbekov is the chosen successor, hand-picked successor whom Atambayev has praised as hardworking, honest, and the best candidate. And he has turned against him, and he has been criticized him in such a lowly terms, as if he doesn't know what he's being given to read, and you know, all these sort of things. But that doesn't matter. The thing that we've seen, for example, with the incident at the heating plant, when we discovered that the Chinese loan of $386 million towards the Bishkek heating plant has been stolen, that we've seen, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of, again, Chinese-funded roads which are melting with the snow. When we're seeing hundreds of schools, including the schools which were personally donated by President Nazarbayev of Kazakhstan, we've seen, you know, the level of corruption, the money stolen. You know, we live in the part of the world where some of the petty, you know, corruption is tolerated, you know, at very high levels, and by the public. They say, you know, of course you are going to steal, you know, 10%, 20%, up towards, you know, as long as things function. But, you know, corruption reached such levels under Atambayev where it did not function, where the roads are literally melting. And the outcry in the public is so loud that Mr. Jeenbekov will not have a choice, but he will have to expose this corruption unless he wants to be blamed for it, you know, in a year or two. Therefore, Jeenbekov, it will be his gravest mistake if he doesn't identify the problems right now, if he doesn't distance himself. If he doesn't,
he cannot. How he can distance himself, because he was part of that.
The way Shavkat Mirziyoyev did. He was a prime minister for 14 years, but he's acting as if he's a revolutionary. The same for Jeenbekov, and it's even more easy because Mr. Atambayev released him from any obligation, moral or otherwise, by criticizing him, by attacking him harshly. Jeenbekov is not
so. May I?
Sure. Jump in. Whoever wants.
So I'd like to avoid making too many comparisons with Uzbekistan. Yes, of course, Mirziyoyev is doing amazing things, but there is still a long way before before Uzbekistan is comparable to autocracies like Kazakhstan. What Jeenbekov is facing, if he does want to reform anything in Kyrgyzstan, there's going to be a lot of debate, a lot of media coverage, discussions in civil society, and Mirziyoyev does not have that type of civic engagement. So comparisons go only that far. But overall, I think I wouldn't hold my breath for Jeenbekov becoming this revolutionary reformist in Kyrgyzstan. I am more skeptical about his presidency. I think he'll just follow a pattern of centralizing power to the extent he can. So not too much to avoid regime change, but large enough to benefit him and his family and his cronies. And just go the same way, that repeat some of the mistakes that Atambayev made during his presidency, of allowing corruption to happen, allowing for governance, and not have a bigger vision for where the country should go, how things should change.
Okay, let's see. So from being best friends to a bitter competitors, to say mildly, how Jeenbekov Atambayev came to this point within just a few months? What were the tipping points and what are at stake going forward? We will continue Majlis podcast discussing these and many other questions shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. We are trying to make sense of recent signs of rift between Kyrgyzstan's current and former presidents. Joining me in the discussion are Erika Merat, Associate Professor at the National Defense University, Edil Baysalov, political activist based in Bishkek, Chris Rickleton, AFP's Central Asia correspondent in Almaty, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, DC. Welcome back, colleagues. Now, Chris, let's bring you at the beginning of the second part. You are kind of quiet. Now, the biggest question is, what happened between these two men? And why things reached to this point within just a short period of time. So take us through some of the early signs of rift, if you can, Chris.
Well, I always thought it would be a difficult transition, both because of the nature of Atambayev's personality, because we do give him credit for walking away from power, but it's particularly difficult to walk away from power in Central Asia. And I think if you have Atambayev's particular characteristics, it then becomes even more difficult. But this idea of, you know, Polnomochi control, you know, a legal mandate, that was always going to belong to Jeyim Bekov. That wasn't something that Atambayev could possess. So there was going to be this tension between Atambayev's vision of himself as Kyrgyzstan's preeminent politician after the 2010 revolution, and this idea that he eased Jeyim Bekov into the presidential seat. And then the simple fact that Jeyim Bekov has the formal power and will collect people around him that tell him that he should use this power. I mean, I didn't anticipate this kind of a collision course, but I think really the dramatization occurred with Atambayev's re-election to the post of chairman of the Social Democratic Party, and the way, as Edil mentioned, some of the things that he said or suggested about Jeyim Bekov, they weren't very nice. The tone of the press conference was very menacing, and quite frankly, he overplayed his hand because he doesn't have this formal mandate that Jeyim Bekov does.
Why he said what he said, like, which angered also Jeyim Bekov? And also, was this a tipping point for Jeyim Bekov?
Well, I mean, I think as I mentioned earlier, Atambayev was particularly angered by Jeyim Bekov's comments at the February meeting of the Security Council, where he singled out some of these appointees that Atambayev had made, or more, you know, he was more generally talking about the GKMB's anti-corruption service, which Atambayev essentially created. He was talking about the prosecutor's office and how it had failed in this battle against corruption. And for Atambayev, this touches on his legacy. Now, if you ask people, different people in Kyrgyzstan, what Atambayev's legacy is, they'll all give you very different answers. But I think there's a general consensus that particularly in the second half of his tenure, to put it mildly, he could have done better. Atambayev doesn't even want to concede this. He doesn't even want to concede that there's room for improvement. If the new president can't speak of room for improvement, what's his job? Is he just going to sit there and be a mute? Of course he isn't. And the way Atambayev went about addressing Jeyim Bekov, I think, upset a lot of people, and clearly Jeyim Bekov's team. And it was yet another opposition politician type speech, because again and again throughout Atambayev's time in office, we saw him make these fiery speeches that we associate with opposition politicians, because he's never really been able to escape this mold of being an opposition politician. For instance, the speech that he made about Nazarbayev that had so much resonance, I actually happen to think it was a fantastic speech. It was the wrong speech to make, and it had disastrous consequences. But in terms of public speaking, because we didn't associate him with great public speaking, it was a powerful speech. And I saw Kyrgyz citizens sitting on benches watching this speech. And Atambayev has this fire, and he decided to throw it all at Jeyim Bekov after his re-election as chair of the SDPK. And I think any human really is going to be offended by some of the things he said. So what we're seeing now is maybe some of these dismissals would have taken place anyway. Certainly they would have taken place anyway. But the speed at which they're taking place, I think, is a reaction to the tone of Atambayev's remarks.
You know, Bruce, it's really fluid. We could argue for hours talking about what's happening in Kyrgyzstan, and we will not be reaching any conclusion. So just trying to understand, make sense of what is happening today from how we come to this point. So what was the tipping points from your point of view which brought us to this stage today?
Well, again, you know, I mean, I'm going to agree with Chris that some of these changes were inevitable. It was going to happen one way or another. And this is actually, at least as I see it, this is pretty simple. When Atambayev was quiet, when he stayed away from the microphone and he was building his fabulous mansion and stuff like that, we really didn't see too much of a problem. I mean, you know, Jane Beckup did kind of criticize or at least say we need to do more about corruption, but I didn't really see a problem. And once Atambayev left the SDPK Congress meeting and where he was elected the chairman and got in front of the microphone and started speaking, then, you know, I mean, it's 12 days since that happened. Mm. And look at all the officials. I mean, it's a cull that's going on out there in Kyrgyzstan right now, all over the place. I'm sure this has surprised Atambayev. I believe that he thought he had a much stronger hand than he did. But I would also agree with the assessment that, you know, Jane Beckup is the president now. Hmm. And the question a lot of people are asking is, you know, what can you do for me? And right now, Atambayev can't do anything for them, but Jane Beckup can do a lot for them. So it's easy that they've transferred their loyalty over to him. But and you know, if Atambayev had just toned down his rhetoric a little bit when he'd gotten in front of the microphone on March 31st, he'd probably be doing a lot better. And you know, again, I'm not saying whether he's guilty or something or not, but I would hope that someone would be able to talk to him and say, just be quiet, enjoy your life in retirement, don't let us see you again, you know, and show that you can finish a term and not be thrown in jail or run out of the country. You know, if they investigated him, yeah, they'd probably find something. And yeah, you'd like to see justice done. But my concern is that constitutionally, Kyrgyz presidents have 1 6-year term. And if the end of their term means self-exile or imprisonment, I can't imagine any president is going to leave office after 6 years. Change the constitution, figure out some way that they can stay in, because they won't have any reason to believe that they won't themselves be in jail or fleeing the country. Mm.
Erika, whatever happens in Kyrgyzstan going forward, obviously Kazakhstan is a kind of player there now after the tension during the election times. What are the readings in Kazakhstan of what's happening in Bishkek these days?
I think all of the neighbors are watching about how Kyrgyzstan is struggling to find a balanced political system. And it seems like it is an endless chaos, but I think there are certain cycles of the chaos, and it is somewhat predictable as well. It'd be interesting to see how the next parliamentary elections will take place, how competitive they will be. But it is a good experiment. Kyrgyzstan is a sort of this, you know, Central Asian lab for democracy. So other countries, hopefully neighboring countries, including Kazakhstan, will learn from its mistakes and from its achievements and try to implement those, you know, the positive features in their own political systems.
Edil, Atambayev had problems with many people in and outside of the country. That includes like Erdogan and Nazarbayev. But I think he was in good terms with Putin. Is Putin saying anything about this?
Putin will not be commenting on these developments, but I'm sure they are, you know, all our neighbors are watching, especially maybe our neighbors in Kazakhstan. You know, we've seen many successful succession plans, like in Azerbaijan, or for example, what we saw, the transition in Armenia to parliamentary democracy. But of course, the succession plan here in Kyrgyzstan utterly failed, as some of us have predicted. Mr. Atambayev was never going to become Deng Xiaoping or, you know, any, you know, Ayatollah Khomeini or Bidzina, Ivanishvili or Plakhatnyuk of Moldova. I've heard with curiosity remarks of both Chris and Bruce, and I think, my friends, you are being too polite. And you are trying to rationalize and look for some meaning. In completely bizarre presidents of Mr. Atambayev. He never had any reason to attack, for example, Mr. Nazarbayev. It wasn't at least attack him so much personally. And the same, there was nothing in the speech of Mr. Jane Beckup in the Security Council that actually had any insult to Mr. Atambayev. It was his choice to be insulted. And long before, for 2 months before the March 31st public party congress, Mr. Atambayev worked feverishly by summoning dozens and dozens of members of parliament, political activists and journalists, and trashing the city president in very lowly terms. So it was very good that he took his conflict with Jane Beckup publicly on the party congress. And thereby, he completely freed Mr. Jeenbekov of any obligations, of any moral obligations towards him that he, of course, had to feel Mr. Atambayev made him a president.
Let's see what happens going forward. Now, we have to also conclude the discussion. We are already way over time. To do this, let's take Bruce, your point. So what do you see the end game here from Jeenbekov's point of view?
Totally removing Atambayev from having any say in power. You know, it's kind of too bad that that's the way it shook out, or maybe it's going to be for the better in the future. I don't know. But I think at this point, Atambayev burned his bridge on March 31st. And the only way he's going to be able to stay in Kyrgyzstan and a free man is if he agrees to absolutely just retire. He talked about making a music CD or something like that. Maybe that's exactly what he should do.
Okay. Chris, your point on this?
I do think that Jeenbekov now has a moment. Again, I'll repeat that he has enormous political capital. He has huge influence over the parliament without needing to rely on any kind of ruling party. That's a legacy of Atambayev and the shadow that he cast over the parliament. But we've seen in other countries that if the president has the right ideas, good things can get done with this kind of mandate. So let's hope that he does good things.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Erika is gone, but she was also kind of alerting us with consolidating so many power is not a good idea. So, Adil, last point from you. So what is that he should avoid going forward? I mean, Jeenbekov should avoid going forward as a president.
You know, I would like to actually strongly disagree with Bruce, you know, that we shouldn't jail our presidents so that we provide them a safe haven and exit so that they depart, with the conclusion of one term. Actually not. You know, Mr. Atambayev is an outlier. He is a corrupt person. He came in bloodshed and he had the audacity to build a $1 million mansion in the state residence or the park that our presidents reside. And you know, he feels like he can do it. He claims that he has his foreign friends could pay for it. And he flies to the summit, this economic forum in Baos on a private jet. He doesn't act the way that a retired democratic president acts. It is unavoidable that he concludes in some sort of a persecution.
Thank you, Adil Baysalov. Great stuff. Adil Baysalov, political activist based in Bishkek. And big thanks goes to Erika Marat, associate professor at the National Defense University, Chris Rickleton, AFP's Central Asia correspondent, and Bruce Farrier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
This is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.